This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Kekin for Jane Lindholm. High school students today face a dilemma. College costs are skyrocketing, and the job market on the other end can be fickle, with salaries varying wildly, along with job opportunities. All that uncertainty is pushing more students to take advantage of the state's career and technical training programs. Vermont has 14 technical centers, high schools that provide not only academic coursework, but hands-on training in a wide variety of areas. Jay Ramsey is Vermont State Director of Career Technical Education. He joins me today. Jay, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Leanne Wright is director of the Northwest Technical Center in St. Albans. And Leanne, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So many listeners may be thinking, okay, these are vocational schools that we're talking about today, but I know that that's a term that many in education want to avoid. Let me start with you, Jay Ramsey. I'm going to ask you both this question, but Jay, why is that? Why are people shying away from that vocational term?
Well, There's a lot of weight with that word, and parents who are in positions to help students make decisions have kind of a bias against the word. And in Europe, it's a great word, and it's a great word in America too, but it doesn't communicate all of what we do in career technical education. So when you think about vocational education, you think maybe it's only for some students, it's only for some jobs, it's only in certain areas, they do it instead of academics, and it's only in high school. But career technical education is for all students. It prepares students for all careers. We have integrated academics into the programs, and we really focus on developing the partnerships between the high schools, the technical centers, and colleges. So students can go on to college through articulation agreements or dual enrollment courses. We also have industry recognized credentials at the end of the program. So the word career technical education really captures what we do.
In a more expansive way than maybe what people perceive, you're saying?
Yes.
And Leanne Wright, how much pushback do you get in St. Albans when you bring up, you know, what goes on at your school? Do you find there's still that stigma attached?
We don't necessarily have pushback, but we find ourselves educating the public and our stakeholders about who we are and what we do. So the old word vocational is sort of antiquated, and the career and technical education is the new 21st century vocational. So just communicating what we do now is an important part of what we do. And our careers have expanded a lot since it was vocational many, many years ago.
We got an email from Sue who wrote in to say she was really bothered by the thought that the only route to a successful career is via college. She writes, in the first place, technical careers are critical to our economy, and I'm not talking about just computer technicians. I'm talking about people trained to service and repair automobiles, farmers, people who take care of our hair and skin, people who cook our meals and make us want to eat out. These people are critical to our society, and we want them to proudly choose such careers and then get the best education possible. I'd like to talk a little bit about what goes on at these technical centers versus what goes on at a traditional high school, just so people can kind of understand the difference. Leanne Wright, when people say, should my son or daughter go to your school, how do they decide if it's a good fit?
Well, I think they need to do their research and find out exactly what they want to do in high school and beyond. And oftentimes, high schoolers don't really know that. And what we encourage is having students take our programs and potentially rule out a career that they may not like. And how they do that when they come to our programs is they explore. They apply their learning. There is college-level work. We have rigorous curriculum. As Jay said, we have industry-recognized credentials that are nationally certified. So it's hard work in our programs, and we don't want students to think that it's an easier path. It's just a different path than you would take in a traditional high school that will get you to the same endpoint.
Well, give me an example of one of the career paths the student might choose and talk about what a typical day would be like for that junior or senior.
Sure. I'll give you our medical professions program as an example. We have a registered nurse that is a teacher, and in any given day, she may lecture on a particular topic. She relies heavily on anatomy and physiology. She has she's an adjunct professor, so she teaches college-level content where students not only get the high school credit, but they also get what's called dual enrollment or college transcripted credit that will follow them. They will explore with labs. They dissect. They take field trips. They do job shadows. They do career work experiences. We've had students that have shadowed in the hospital, local hospital here, shadowing physical therapists and doctors and nurses and a variety of careers to just sort of decide how they want to focus their career.
And when that student graduates from the technical center going in that field, what sort of a certificate or what do they have to show as far as getting a job in that healthcare field when they leave?
Well, there's a couple of things in this particular program. We have what's called the licensed nursing assistant that all students have the option of training for. And so when they graduate, they could choose to continue to practice in this licensed nursing assistant field in a hospital or a local nursing home while attending college that would allow them to secure some funding while they are in college. And oftentimes when you're working as a licensed nursing assistant, you can get college tuition from that particular business that will help them not have those college bills that you were referring to in the very beginning of the segment.
So if a student takes that track, they may work for a while as a licensed nurse assistant and then decide, you know what, I do want to go back to college, get that RN or even go further. And they'll have some money and probably a lot less debt when they're completed.
We have students that choose that path, and most of our students go right on to college.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about career technical education in Vermont, the 14 technical high schools that operate, and what their enrollment is doing as far as is it up, is it steady, what kind of coursework they're offering, and how these schools differ from traditional high schools. My guests are Jay Ramsey. He's the Vermont State Director of Career Technical Education, and Leanne Wright. She's Director of the Northwest Technical Center in St. Albans. Listeners, did you go to a tech center? Why? And what sort of impact did that education have on you and your career? Are you a teacher at one of the state's tech high schools? We'd love to hear from you today. You can call us at 1-800-639-2211, or if it's your computer, you can head over to our program page at vpr.net and post your thoughts there. Well, I want to ask you, when I was doing research on this on a nationwide scale, it seems as though numbers for students entering these types of schools are up. In Vermont, was I correct in saying at the top of the show that statewide enrollment numbers at technical centers are up?
Yes, I think that's fair to say. When we look at an overall trend, let's say from 2004 to 2014, the available 11th and 12th grade population, that's who is entitled to go to the technical centers, that population decreased by about 13%. But we saw a corresponding increase in participation of about 2.4%. So in the last school year, we had 5,043 students in grades 9 through 12 in career technical education. The 9th and 10th grade programs are introductory courses that students can take.
We got an email from someone that was interested in kind of pointing out that too often the discussion on technical centers focuses around the technical skills and abilities that students gain without addressing the employability skills, what this person referred to as soft skills that the students gain, the skills of communication, interpersonal skills, critical thinking, and that sort of thing. Leanne Wright, how do instructors in St. Albans try to deal with those soft skills when they're teaching things like health sciences or computer programming, that sort of thing?
Oh, they're inserted in a daily basis. We have our instructors that model those soft skills, and then we have our students practice them. So my reference to job shadows and the career work experiences, we point out the importance of employability skills and the soft skills that are vital to being successful in any career.
How ready are students when they enter high school? What sort of a grasp on those sorts of things do they have, or are you starting from square one?
It varies. I would say that sometimes, you know, households play a role in those employability skills and the work ethic that they view. And I would say that there's some students that come in that have them down already. So I don't necessarily see a pattern.
Herman wrote in that CTE should be funded through a payroll or a business tax as opposed to sort of a K-12 education funding program, because he felt that a lot of these skills are geared, at least in technical centers, to maybe local employers. And I'm wondering, Jay Ramsey, what do you think about that? What do you think about that the business community should do more to support technical centers, maybe like they do in actually, they don't do it in Europe, but I think taxes do it in Europe. But what do you think about just switching the funding mechanism?
Well, I think if you were to look at the relationships that business and industry have with our technical centers and the programs that are there, they do provide a lot of support. It might not be monetary support, but they might open up their shops to have students come in and do co-op experiences, or an owner of a business might serve on a program advisory committee. So I do think that business and industry is involved in the technical education system. I worry about, as a citizen of Vermont, taxes too, and I worry about overtaxing business and industry, as we have lots of small businesses in Vermont.
Well, I want to ask you how expensive tech centers are to run. I have to say I was super impressed when I went to Stafford Technical Center recently, a couple different times in the last year, once to talk with folks in their digital arts coursework area and another to talk with members of their robotics team. And the equipment and just classroom workshop space was so impressive. The computers that the digital arts students were working on, the tools and machinery that the robotics team had at their disposal was pretty impressive. Jay Ramsey, how expensive is a technical center to operate versus a traditional high school?
Well, I think your observation is very correct. We have lots of lab spaces with lots of expensive equipment that's on par, if not better than what business and industry has. Students need to have the experience and gain their skills on relevant technology, and so we have to keep updating it. So it is expensive. That's part of the reason that the state of Vermont decided long ago, in probably the 1940s, to go with a regional model, that when you have collective resources in the different regions of the state, you can have this expensive equipment and serve the students better.
So that you're spreading it out, you're attracting students from a larger area, not every town needs to have this sort of facility?
Yes.
A 2011 study done by Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce found that people with a bachelor's degree make about 84% more over a lifetime than high school graduates. And I'm wondering how often you hear from parents who say, my child wants to study digital arts or criminal justice at one of the tech centers, but I'm worried that if he or she does that, it will make it harder for my child to get into college later if they change their mind. Leanne Wright, I mean, at the beginning of this program, you were talking about some concerns that parents had about going to a vocational school versus a regular high school. What about the concern that parents have about, I really do want my child to go to college later, and I'm worried this may not get them to the best college they can get to?
We do hear that, and we're seeing that our students are getting into colleges that their peers are getting into when they're choosing a traditional high school path. We tell our students that you have to get education beyond high school. You cannot live in this world with just a high school diploma. That's, you know, small percent of the population that can make that happen, and we have resources right in our school that can help our students get education beyond high school. We have a thriving continuing education department that offers education and training beyond high school if they choose not to go right into college. And we have students that are very successful in our program that then are accepted into colleges and can thrive.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about career technical education in Vermont. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Maybe you went to a tech center and it helped you launch your career, or maybe you teach at one of the tech centers across the state and you'd like to weigh in on today's discussion. We'd love to hear from you. And Jay Ramsey, you were about to say something, so I want to let you finish your thought.
Thank you. I just want to provide a statistic here that around college enrollment, 41% of Vermont students who had participated in career technical education were enrolled in post-secondary education. That's from data from last year. And the post-secondary institutions that the that our CTE students most frequently attend are the Community College of Vermont, Vermont Technical College, Linden State College, Castleton State College, Johnson State College. So when we talk about we really need to keep our resources in our state, we shouldn't let young people, we shouldn't be encouraging young people to leave the state, we need to create opportunities for them here. Our CTE students are, for the most part, staying in Vermont and attending college in Vermont, and they will be working in Vermont.
Let's bring some listeners into this conversation right now. We've got a call from Margaret, who's checking in from Montpelier. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for calling in today. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm so interested in what you're discussing because I'm the parent of a daughter who went to Stafford, and I had many of the concerns that you're expressing about whether she would be able to attend college and trained in a way to attend college, because I grew up in New York where BOCES was the trade school, and it was definitely considered the trade school versus college. And I could not have been more pleased with the education she got at Stafford. She just had a fantastic experience that I think led her to gain leadership skills that she probably would not have gotten in the small high school that she would have attended. And she not only got a college education, but she graduated with a major and a minor, has a great job right now, and it has stayed locally, too. That's incredibly important to her, to stay in her community and help. She's a member of the Rutland Young Professionals, very engaged in the Rutland area. And I think the technical center option for her was just perfect, and it led her down a road that she wouldn't have had, I don't think, otherwise. So I'm a huge supporter of it.
Margaret, thanks for that call. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Again, our number is 1-800-639-2211, and we'll get to more of your calls and talk more about technical center training across Vermont after a short break. This is Vermont Edition. We're talking about what used to be known as vocational training today on Vermont Edition. Now it's called Career and Technical Education in Vermont and around the country. Enrollment at technical high schools is up as more and more students are looking at alternative pathways to college, careers, and financial independence. We'd like to hear what you think about this. You can call us at 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go back to the phone lines now and check in with Holly, who's calling from East Montpelier. Hi, Holly. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I think that the Career and Technical Education Centers are doing a great job helping families who are bringing their kids in understand kind of what it's all about. But I'm wondering if there's a plan in place or more opportunities for a broader public outreach to help people understand, you know, when you see that electrician or you see that plumber, there's a lot behind what those people are doing. When you see someone who's fixing your car, there's a lot of technology that's involved in that. And I don't think people really appreciate how much goes into creating those jobs for people. And Vermont is certainly lacking in many of those areas where you have really hands-on skills that are necessary. And I just wonder how the Career and Technical Education Centers are addressing that sort of in a broader way.
Holly, great question. Leanne Wright, what about getting the word out to make people fully understand that, all right, when you call a plumber or an electrician or some other skilled person in a trade, they've got a lot of training, and some of that training may come from a school like yours?
Absolutely. We try to work a lot on outreach and communicating what we do and how we do it. And at our school, we call it the drip. And the drip is to communicate to our public about the careers that are going to be needed in the future. We listen to our community and try to align what the needs are in the future and create programming to get our students prepared to fill those jobs. It's not always easy. It's trying to align what high school students might be interested in with what the community needs, and that doesn't always align. But for sure, I think that the Career and Technical Education is a place where students come that are interested. We have students that are interested in working on cars. We have students that are interested in building houses. And those are all necessary tradespeople that we'll need forever. We'll never outsource that.
All right, let's take another call now. We've got a lot of folks stacked up. Seems to be an interesting discussion. Let me get to Bruce, who's calling from Essex. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for calling in today. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, first of all, I'm glad I tuned in. I'm learning a lot. Back in the day, back in the 80s, I worked for former Senator Stafford and the Stafford Regional Technical Center is named after him. And I wrote the Vocational Education Amendments of 84. We stayed in great touch. with the then we called them the vocational tech center directors, and a lot of the students, because we learned a lot in shaping national policy about vocational education from some great leaders in the state of Vermont then, and sounds like they're still around, but just different names. And the Rutland region is a fantastic place, and it wasn't named Stafford then. Lou Saliber was the director and a very inspirational guy, and we got a lot of see a lot of hands-on stuff. And also the important thing that was going on was you were learning a work ethic. Employers told us they wanted people to have some basic skills, but they also wanted them to be able to show up on time. So you've got quite a package that you're offering at the Tech and Career Centers today, but I really thank you for the job you're doing.
Bruce, thanks for that call. I really appreciate it. Kate sent us this post that says, I'm curious to hear specifically about how these programs work to encourage women and girls in the trades that are often male-dominated, for example, construction, metalworking, technology, and mechanics. Jay Ramsey, let me ask you that on a statewide basis. How are you trying to focus on that?
I think it's a great question, and I'll lead with a credential that I have, which is the state belongs to an organization called the National Alliance for Partnerships in Equity. And I was the first male president of that organization last year in its 35-year history. And the work of that organization and the work of myself and several other leaders in technical education in Vermont is focused on helping get young women and girls into programs that lead to non-traditional careers for women and vice versa, to get young men involved in programs that are non-traditional for men. So health careers is one for men. There's a long list of careers for women that are non-traditional for women. And it's a struggle, I will acknowledge that, when you have high school age young women who are up against peer pressure, who are up against family bias, against a career choice.
What's appropriate and what's not, say?
Yeah, to say, why would my daughter want to pursue a career in construction when we as the adults in your life know that you're going to face an uphill battle because it's all men in that field and you're going to be objectified, you know, the sort of natural parental fears in that area. But those girls that go into those programs are very strong. They're very bright. They're very committed and they know what they want and they're going to make it happen. So it's not to say that we don't overlook that. It's very much in the front of our thinking about programs and how we recruit for programs. And it's even included as one of the measures for the Perkins Grant, which is a federal funding source that comes into the technical centers.
Leanne Wright, I'm curious, when you mix in a component of hands-on learning in a high school environment, how does that impact graduation rates? When you have a student who's more focused on, say, a goal or a career choice, are you seeing higher graduation rates than a traditional high school, or is there any correlation there?
Absolutely. We're finding that students that are interested in a particular topic or a particular career are more likely to graduate from their home high school, just because they have that interest. They're motivated. They're with people and peers that have the same interests. So, absolutely, that is a statistic.
Let's go back to the phone lines now and take one of the latest calls. Go ahead, Ward from Rockingham.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
My experience with the with this was fantastic. My days in high school, I lived in that department in my high school. But it also helped. It just helped tremendously when I joined the service. I joined the Navy, became an aviation structural mechanic. And being one of the few guys there that didn't have to be taught what end of a screwdriver to use or how to properly, you know, when to wear safety glasses, the basics that I was taught really helped me accelerate in that part. Later on in life, I went back to school in my 30s. I went to school at Michigan State. I got a degree in animal science and was a veterinary technician. But I returned back to the trades just because of the amount of money that I can make versus the other stuff there. there is career choices in this industry. I work in the construction industry now, but I'd like to also throw out that giving some truck driving experience to it. The country needs truck drivers, and I don't mean just people that can hold a handlebar, I mean the steering wheel, but people who are competent with hazmat, tankers, and things of that nature are sought after very much. And I think that if we could implement some of that into the trades, it would be lucrative for the students, but also a big help for the country that is, I mean, we're lacking in truck drivers, where basically truck drivers today, you know, call the shots as to what they want to do and how much they want to make.
Ward, let me throw that to Jay Ramsey as a thought for another field. Is that, you know, do you do commercial driving instruction at all? Is that one of the skills that is covered at all?
In some programs, depends on the student's age. I think they have to be 18 or older to be able to sit for a CDL. But certainly, as part of the regional career centers, there are evening programs. It's called Adult Technical Education. And all of the centers have an Adult Technical Education coordinator. They come up with classes. I know many of them offer CDL courses. So, you know, those options are available. And sometimes the adult technical education coordinators are looking for ideas to offer. So I recommend people call and check in with their adult tech ed coordinator to see what's going on.
I got an email from Ken who wrote in questioning the merit of having different school tracks. He kind of said that he sees the merit in both, but he'd like to see traditional high schools be more hands-on and tied to the real world, so graduating students would have maybe some of those qualities that Ward talked about, and also CTE centers exposing their students to more abstract thought and critical thinking. Basically, it sounds as though he's wondering, why do we need two separate tracks to cover these skills? Leanne Wright, let me ask you that question.
That's a great question. I would tell you that it appears that high schools are becoming more like technical centers, and I'm referring to the Act 77 Flexible Pathways that just has passed recently, and basically that is trying to support students that have interest. So personal learning plans are now being developed for students that are going to be graduating in 2020. So we're seeing that high schools are really focused on individual student learning. So making sure that they are following their passion so that they can be successful, and it's simulating career technical centers, coincidentally.
Well, and I'm also curious to what extent the CTE system and the secondary level collaborate with Vermont Technical College. Do you, Jay Ramsey, work closely with Vermont Technical College in any regard?
Yeah, so Vermont Technical College is a recipient of some Perkins funds, and I work closely with Rosemary Distel. She's an associate academic dean there, and Laurel Butler. So we work together to create statewide articulation agreements so students can go from their technical center to programs that are related at VTC and not have to repeat instruction. So it speeds up the time it takes to complete to get to a degree. And we've collaborated on other projects around women in the trade. So VTC hosts Women Can Do, which is a Vermont Works for Women project. And they've done some really great things over the last couple of years during the summer to have young women on campus to be exposed through a modified Rosie's Girls program that's a summer camp there.
Well, Jay Ramsey and Leanne Wright, I want to thank you both very much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Jay Ramsey is the Vermont State Director of Career Technical Education. Leanne Wright directs the Northwest Technical Center in St. Albans. It's one of 14 tech centers in the state. Coming up, heroin and fentanyl-related deaths have risen sharply in Vermont since 2013. It's a trend that's disturbing many state health officials. We'll talk with Dr. Harry Chan, Vermont's health commissioner, about a new program the state is launching to try and reduce deaths from heroin overdoses. That's just ahead on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Kack. Recently, you might have seen or heard public service announcements like the following, featuring Vermont's health commissioner, Dr. Harry Chan.
To save lives, the Vermont Department of Health is giving out a drug called naloxone, or Narcan, that can easily reverse an opiate overdose. Emergency medical responders and some police carry these drugs around the state, and you can too. Anyone who calls 911 or gives Narcan is protected from prosecution under Vermont law. If you want more information, go to healthvermont.gov.
And we've asked the commissioner to talk with us about the state's new efforts using Narcan to combat heroin deaths. Dr. Chen, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Great. It's great to be here, Dinah.
So getting Narcan or naloxone into the hands of as many Vermonters as possible may seem like a drastic step by the state health department, but talk about why you see it as necessary.
Well, I think, you know, importantly, that naloxone or Narcan is really one of our major strategies to try to address the crisis of opioid overdoses and addiction in Vermont. And traditionally, naloxone, which is extremely effective in reversing overdoses, has been in the healthcare system, in emergency departments, in hospitals. Slowly it moved out to EMS, and now it's we're trying to push it out further and further. Public safety is another group, and at least 20 police departments use them and carry them in Vermont. And then finally, we want to push them out to people who are addicted and injection users, their friends, their families, because we know that that in an overdose situation, seconds and minutes can make the difference between life and death, and it can save lives. And there's really no downside to using the naloxone. And so part of what we're trying to do in our program is give it out, push it out to individuals through recovery centers, through needle and syringe exchanges, through our hub treatment centers, and then ultimately to friends and families.
So explain how Narcan works. Is it something you inject into someone, or is it something you spray in their nose? What does it look like an EpiPen?
Well, it's there are different ways of delivering it, and the reason I'd like to use naloxone is because nowhere will you see the word Narcan. So I think it's confusing to people, so that's why I prefer naloxone. That's the generic name. Previously, it's been given as an injection, but it can be given very effectively through a nasal, intranasal spray, much like you would an allergy spray or a nasal spray when you get a cold. And so there are kits that we've created initially that would provide the naloxone in a nasal spray through an atomizer. And more recently, there's a product out which costs the same, which actually has an increased dose of naloxone that that can be really easily delivered with a very minimal educational effort.
Is there any screening process for someone who calls in to get one of these kits?
Well, there actually is no screening process, and I think that it's important in that effect that there's no, you know, you get education. You actually probably have to fill out some demographic data. And if you come back for a refill, we're really trying to get some important information about how it's used, how often it's used, and things of that sort. But, if you try to get too much information, then as you might expect, it becomes a barrier. So we really want to minimize the barrier to Vermonters getting naloxone into their hands and hopefully using them in a life or death situation when somebody's in an overdose situation.
Some people, as you mentioned, there is no harm, but go over the fact that if you give this accidentally to someone else, talk about the fact that there is it's not going to hurt anybody if you get this accidentally. Is that correct?
Oh, Right, exactly. That's one of the reasons I think it's so attractive to try to more broadly distribute it, is that if for you and I, it's just like having a little salt water in our nose. So there's no active effect unless you're under the influence of opioid drugs. And so to that extent, you won't do any harm, but you may actually save a life.
How many of these kits do you hope to get out across Vermont?
Well, just as an example, in the second quarter of 2016, we got out about 2,000 of these kits. And we also know that probably 122 of them have been used. And for example, by comparison, in 2014, the same time, we probably got out about 800 of the kits. So we're trying to push these out. in response to the recent overdoses of a likely heroin batch mixed with fentanyl, we actually had to we did our own Olympic relay, relaying some extra doses up to Newport and to Central Vermont to make sure that our distribution points had adequate supplies.
And then naloxone works just as well on fentanyl as it does on heroin.
It works just as well, but because fentanyl can be 50 times stronger than heroin, you may need more, and that's one of the challenges. Sometimes you need more in terms of a second dose. So if it doesn't work the first time, now we're actually advising people to use it a second time, to use a second dose. And we're finding at least probably a third of the instances, at least with ambulances, EMS, they're needing a second dose. The data with bystander administered is really less reliable, as you might expect.
And how is this being funded? What does a kit for the naloxone cost?
Well, a kit costs us approximately somewhere around $60. We have, as part of our budget, last year and then this year through Act 173, we have enhanced funding to both supply naloxone to EMS, to public safety agencies, and to the general public, as I outlined. And that's actually supported by a fee, something we call the manufacturer's fee. It's a fee on pharmaceutical companies that do business with Vermont Medicaid, a percentage of the business they do. So I guess to some extent that makes some sense, right?
It does.
Yep.
Well, and it's going to be interesting to see if how many lives this can save, and it seems like a relatively low cost if you can save a life. Dr. Chen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Great. Thanks for having me, Nina.
Dr. Harry Chen is Vermont's health commissioner. He was speaking with us today on the state's new efforts to expand access to Narcan or naloxone. Tomorrow, we'll listen back to a show from earlier this year when we met Muslim Girls Making Change. The four high school students from Burlington and South Burlington have been using slam poetry to spread a message of awareness and hope. Tune in for that tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone, with production assistance from Gene Murphy. Liam Connors directed the program, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. From PEG TV's studios in Rutland, I'm Nina Keck. Thanks for listening.